नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टकी। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 47 एंटाइटल्ड द सॉन्ग ऑफ द बी टेक्स्ट 21। Api certainly bata regrettable Madhupuryam on the city of Mathura Aryaputra the son of Nanda Maharaj Adhuna now Aste recites Smriti remembers Sir he Pitragehan, the household affairs of his father. Saumya, O great soul Uddhav. Bandhun, his friends. Cha, and Gopan, the cowherd boys. Kvachit, sometimes. Api, or Sa, he. Katha, talks na of us kinkari naam of the maid servants grinite relates bhujam hand aguru sugandham having the fragrance of aguru murdhni on the head adhyasyat will keep kada when na maybe api bata madhupuryam aryaputro dunaste Smarati sa pitra gehan saumya bandhunascha gopan. Kvachid api sa katha na kinkari naam grinite. Bhujam aguru sugandham murdhyan styat kade na nu. Nam aguru sugandham. Murdhana dasyat kada ne api bata madhupuryam aryaputro dhunaste smarati sa pitra gehan saumya bandhumscha gopan kvachit api sa katha na kinkari naam grinite Bhujam aguru sugandham murdhya dasyat kadanu api bata madhupuryam aryaputro dhunaste smarati cha pitragehan saumya bandhum cha gopan Vachit api sa katha na kinkari naam grinite. Bhujam aguru sugandham murdhnya dasyat kadanu.
Yeah.
पुर्याम आर्यपुत्रो धुनास्ते सरति स पितृगृहान् सौम्य बन्धुं स गोपान् क्वचिदपि स कथा न किङ्करीणां गृणीते गुरु सुगंधम मूर्ध्यादास कदानु
It's a little tough to read. Mata this.
Apipata madhu puryam Aryaputro dhunaste पितृगृहान् सौम्य बन्धुं स गोपान् स्वचिदपि स कथानां किङ्करीणां गृणीते भुजम् अगुरु सुगन्धम् मूर्धना सस्तु
Translation and purport by the disciples of his Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: O Uddhav, it is indeed regrettable that Krishna resides in Mathura. Does he remember his father's household affairs and his friends, the cowherd boys? O great soul, does he ever talk about us, his maidservants? When will he lay on our heads his aguru-scented hand?
Purport: The translation and word meanings for this verse are taken from Srila Prabhupada's Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Leela 6.68. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti writes very poetically with deep spiritual insight about the emotions expressed in this and the previous nine verses. He interprets Radharani's feelings as follows. Srimati Radharani thought, since Krishna was once satisfied in Vraj but left for Mathura city, won't he also develop a desire to leave that place and go somewhere else? Mathura is so close to Vrindavan that it's possible he may even come back here. Krishna is the son of a respectable gentleman, Nanda Maharaj, so he must be staying in Mathura because of his sense of obligation to his father who authorized his going there. On the other hand, while Nanda's whole life is dedicated exclusively to Krishna, Nanda is so innocent that he allowed himself to be tricked by the Yadus who brought Krishna to Mathura. Krishna must be thinking, alas, alas, since even my father could not bring me back to Vraj, what can I do to return there? Thus Krishna must be impatient to come back here, and so he has sent you a messenger. It is only because Nanda is so innocent that he allowed his son to leave. If Nanda had allowed Krishna's mother, the queen of Vraj, to do so, she would have climbed onto Akrura's chariot and, holding her son by the neck, gone off to Mathura with him, followed by all the gopis. But this was not possible. Ever since Krishna left, Nanda has been stunned by separation from him, and Nanda's treasury rooms, storehouses, kitchens, sleeping quarters, opulent houses, and so on are now vacant. Unswept and uncleansed, they are littered with grass, dust, leaves and cobwebs. Does Krishna ever remember his father's houses? And does he sometimes remember Subal and his other friends who are now lying stunned in other neglected houses? The women in Mathura who now associate with Krishna cannot know how to serve him in the way that pleases him most. When they see he is not satisfied and ask how they can make him happy, does he tell them about us gopis? Krishna must tell them, you city ladies cannot please me as much as the gopis of Raj. They are most expert in stringing flower garlands, perfuming their bodies with ointments, playing various rhythms and melodies on stringed instruments, dancing and singing in the ras performance, displaying their beauty, charm and cleverness, and skillfully playing at questions and answers. They are specially expert in the pastimes of meeting one's lover and showing jealous anger and other signs of pure love and affection. Surely Krishna must know this. Therefore he'll probably tell the women of Mathura, my dear women of the Yadu clan, please go back to your families. I no longer desire to associate with you.
In fact, I am going back to Vraj early tomorrow morning. When will Krishna speak like this and come back here to place his hand fragrant with Aguru on our heads? Then he will console us, saying, O beloveds of my heart, I swear to you that I will never abandon you again and go elsewhere. Indeed, I have not been able to find anyone in all the three worlds with even a trace of your good qualities. Thus, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti interprets the feelings of Srimati Radharani. The Acharya further explains that the present text displays the speech called Sujalpa, as described by Rupa Goswami. In Ujjvala Niramani 14.200, Rupa Goswami's translation is, when, out of honest sincerity, a lover questions Sri Hari with gravity, humility, unsteadiness and eagerness, such speech is known as Sujalpa. Concluding this section of chapter 47, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that there are 10 divisions of divine madness, Divyonmad, which are expressed by the 10 divisions of Chitra Jalpa, or variegated speech. Such divine madness is shown in the special pastime of bewilderment, which is itself part of the supreme bliss, Mahabhav, of Srimati Radharani. The Acharya quotes the following verses from Rupa Goswami's Ujjvala Niramani, 14.174 and 178 to 180, to explain these ecstasies. It is virtually only within the princess of Vrindavan, that is Srimati Radharani, that the ecstasy of bewilderment arises. She has attained to a special stage of this bewilderment, a wonderful state that resembles delusion. Known as Divyonamad, it has many aspects which come and go unsteadily, and one of these manifestations is Chitra Jalpa. This talk, induced by her seeing her beloved's friend, is filled with covered anger and comprises many different ecstasies. It culminates in her intense, anxious eagerness. This Chitra Jalpa has 10 divisions known as Prajalpa, Parijalpa, Vijalpa, Ujalpa, Sanjalpa, Avajalpa, Abhijalpa, Ajalpa, Pratijalpa and Sujalpa. Finally, some authorities say that Krishna himself, eager to drink the sweetness of his beloved speech, assumed the form of the messenger bee. Om Ajnan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Menobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadhati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Upapadalamam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsa E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubha Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Namo Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Lord Kapildev, he tells us that of all the various instructions and
injunctions, the rules that we find in spiritual life, there are so many of them, and at different levels of our spiritual intensity or interest, we come across and we try to follow them. So one may question, what are the most, is that the essence of everything that, all that we learn, that we can find here? And that's where Lord Kapildev says that finally, there are two main instructions which actually encompass or cover everything that is there. And that is to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. It may sound basic, but really Krishna consciousness is for the simple. So in that sense, when we unclutter a complicated mind and actually have faith in the simplicity of the essence of instruction that we hear, it's not the question of loftiness or the very variegatedness, but it's more the sincerity with which we follow these the instructions. And that is why Kapildev has condensed it into these instructions. And though we may understand it on a mental level, pursuit of that in our entire life, that to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna, is really the essence of everything that is in this material life. And actually, if you see that Bhagavad Gita was actually spoken to Arjun on the battlefield, and right through Krishna explains to him for our benefit, for benefit of eternity, for everybody who reads the Bhagavad Gita, why through the instructions of Krishna himself, why Arjun should surrender, which he finally does at the end when Krishna tells him that leave aside everything and sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam braja, just surrender unto me. You know, he tells him, think of me, worship me. So that is at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. And Srimad Bhagavatam actually starts from on that same mood of surrender. Never think of anything else but Krishna, always think of Krishna. And right from the beginning, say the Pandavas' journey under Queen Kunti, Queen Kunti's prayers, if you see every canto, every volume, the different avatars that come, the various great personalities that we read about, finally they are actually bringing us to the same platform. You know, when we come to, say, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruv Maharaj, and then even in the 10th canto, before we come to the culmination in the with the section of the gopis that we are reading now, Vasudev and Devaki also, they spent how many years? Years and years in jail. They are shackled just for the pleasure of Krishna, just so that Krishna could perform his pastimes, witnessing so many deaths of infants. So all this, these are the acts of surrender which are actually meant for us to first understand and then try to bring it into our own lives. So when we finally come to the highest level of surrender, which is exhibited by the gopis and which we have been reading for last several weeks in the Bhagavatam, why is it considered the highest level? Because it is done with completely no other intention but to please Krishna. Actually, when we read about the stories of the gopis also, why is it said that it is the most confidential knowledge, and why we should read about it only after we've read all the other 9 cantos, is because to understand that level of surrender, one could easily misunderstand it. And that is why we have to sequentially, not only sequentially understand, first read the Bhagavad Gita before we come to the Bhagavatam, but also to read it through the eyes of Shastra and through eyes of Guru and through the eyes of Sadhu. So that is why Prabhupada's purports and then the various current acharyas who speak about it can actually take us to understand that. And some of the essences that we see in this surrender, see, the question in our mind would be that we know about the gopis, we know also about their surrender, but It can be, there can be two thoughts in our mind perhaps. One is that if we are not devotees or if we are liable for misunderstanding, then we could see the wrong parts in it, and like so many people in the world may try to misunderstand Krishna's role and so on. That we assume that may not be the case, at least for most of us in this room. But even if you've understood mentally, the thing is, what is, we may say that is in a completely different realm, different spiritual level, different platform, different standard, and I am not at that level, so there may be some bewilderment as to what is the application to me, what do I do, you know, I mean, there is such a big gap, you know, it's like somebody who's entering nursery and we now say that tomorrow you go to take your PhD, so we may just give it up, but actually, it is true that, of course, we cannot be on the level, because of all the pure devotees, of all the great sadhus and saints, so many who have come through different yugas and different eras, everybody talks about this, the greatest of all the surrender of the gopis, that just gives a glimpse of the magnitude. But what we can do is, as Rupa Goswami has asked all of us, and since we are Rupanugas, who are followers of Rupa Goswami, who was one of the chief proponents of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy and who was instrumental among the six Goswamis to propagate his message, that we should follow in the footsteps of the gopis. So how do we do that? So what are the lessons that we can draw from this surrender? Or what are the observations, what is the essence within the surrender? For instance, we read about the gopis, how they surrendered everything. So what was their mood? What was their consciousness? And to think that even for a moment, even for, as it is described so beautifully in the verses here, that the gopis would condemn themselves or condemn Lord Brahma, the creator, because why did he create the eyes and the eyelashes so that why would we need to even blink for a second? Because for a fraction of a second, because when you blink then they couldn't see Krishna. So even for that fraction of a second, they couldn't feel like being away from Krishna. So that was the mood and the intensity of giving everything to Krishna. Which meant that what we can understand is that they've given everything for the benefit of Krishna, everything means their own desires, everything was only to please Him. We do not realize sometimes that actually when the Rasleela was enacted, when it was Krishna's desire for the pleasure of His devotees, when He, on the night of Sharad Purnima, when all of them came, and the gopis abandoned everything, they lost their social status, their prestige, their possessions, their wealth, their reputation, and they ran there. It was not because the flute playing was so beautiful. It was. It was mesmeric. It was something which is, we cannot even describe what that is like. We cannot imagine what it is like. But it was because it pleased Krishna. It was because Krishna wanted to, they understood that by Krishna playing the flute, Krishna wanted to dance with them. And that was their only desire. So their desire was to please Krishna. That was the principle. And it manifested in their abandoning everything and whatever needed to be done. Similarly, we have the same gopis, a story about their when Krishna had a headache. And when it was told to them that this headache can only be cured if you, if he wants the dust of your feet, of your lotus feet. And that would be that will cure him. But if you give this the dust, you will be condemned for to go to hell. So they did not even take a fraction of a second to decide instantly, and they immediately gave the dust from below their feet to give it. So their consciousness was entirely towards pleasing Krishna, and. On this once, His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was describing the consciousness of the gopis in this same episode of the Krishna's headache. And he said that Krishna the gopis, their mood was that if the headache was to say last for a minute, and if by giving the dust, if it reduced it by even 30 seconds, they were more than willing to give the dust so that they could, and they did not mind for giving 30 seconds of reduction of headache, they didn't mind going to hell for eternity. So this was the kind of equation that they had in terms of their complete absorption of pleasing Krishna. So we get this underlying principle that pleasing Krishna is critical. Now we would say, what is the other thing that we hear from our from the scriptures and the sadhus, is that Krishna manifests himself in many ways, among the deities, his paraphernalia, his holy name, but also through his instructions coming and through the parampara. And that is why the manifestation of Krishna's message as well as pleasing Krishna can be done by pleasing the spiritual master. So we may say that we are not reading about the gopis to understand how we could someday be at that level, or to say that we'll never be at that level and therefore there's no application for us. No, we can see this is to tell us what to understand the glories of Krishna in the first place, to understand how these gopis were not in the previous yugas, Treta Yuga. These are great Maharishis who actually wanted to directly absorb themselves in service to Lord Ram. And Lord Ram had promised them that when I come to my next incarnation, then when I come again in the Dwapar Yuga, you can come with to this material world. So these are all eternal associates of the Lord. So what we do see is that to follow in the footsteps, as Rupa Goswami has told us, what we need to do is to find a bona fide spiritual master, surrender unto him, and try to please him. Because pleasing him, and he who understands how to please Krishna, should be our goal. So it's like, we go to the root. The root is the spiritual master is all knowing. He understands Krishna. I don't understand Krishna, but if he understands and his instructions and it pleases him, and pleasing the spiritual master means pleasing his disciples or his followers, his sincere devotees. Then in that that is my only focus, and that's something which is mentally also at a level which we can easily understand and relate to if we have a sincere heart. So Srila Prabhupada for us has come into this world, and everything that we know we are doing through his guidance. Whatever we follow, trying to follow in our sadhana, right from chanting the holy names to so many practices, the etiquettes, coming to the temple, so many vidhis are there. And then it covers every aspect of our life. Even so many sanskaras are there. All that is given by Srila Prabhupada and under his guidance. And he has, of course, taken it from acharyas and others and put it in a level where we can all follow, we can all understand, and at the appropriate levels. So that, and that is why he acknowledged and appreciated devotees, disciples who, when he started the movement in the West, we know the stories about you can say illiterate the initial disciples were in terms of Vaishnava philosophy, or how unknown it was about the various etiquettes and rituals and all. But Prabhupada was praising them so lavishly, not only to them but also in public and from his heart. Devotees who were young disciples who didn't even know how to wear a dhoti properly or to wear a sari properly, didn't know how to pronounce, didn't even understand sometimes what he was actually speaking, but already had developed that spirit of surrender, which Prabhupada called the spirit of Vrindavan. Prabhupada took Vrindavan with him wherever he went. He actually took Vrindavan. So in the same way, by understanding Prabhupada's mood, we will be able to follow, serve Krishna. So Prabhupada praised them because he understood that these disciples were also trying to absorb the same mood of Vrindavan by going out on the streets, by doing things which was against their conditioning. It was so difficult for them. It must have been so difficult for them, especially in the Western countries, to completely change and give up everything that was of the past. So it was exactly on the lines, they're following on the lines of the gopis, in their own, you can say, childlike ways, childlike from the point of view of spiritual development, where they must have made so many mistakes. But Prabhupada, that's why I constantly said that if you're serious and if you have no ill motivations, that is all we need. Sincere, serious, and without any ulterior motivations. So, and when he saw a trace of arrogance or a trace of pride in someone, he would ignore it, or he wouldn't really. And devotees themselves have spoken. In the memories of Srila Prabhupada, which many of his disciples have spoken about, it's very beautiful. So many of them relate that, sometimes, like Ridhanand Maharaj, for instance, who's one of the leading, his earliest disciples, and he was mostly in the South America and in the US. And once there was some new young girl who had come to whom he had brought to Srila Prabhupada in somewhere in South America, maybe Venezuela or somewhere. And Prabhupada was giving so much attention, so much confidence, and she was completely new. First time she was coming, she knew nothing about ISKCON or anything. And then in the car, he says that, you know, he tried to think of some of the shlokas. He had memorized some of the shlokas. So he started reciting those shlokas. Prabhupada, and in trying to say, link it to something which he was trying to say. But he said, he himself says that my mood was to try to impress my guru. And Prabhupada just, he just looked at him, okay, he heard, and he didn't say anything, just turned his face away. So he said, I immediately understood that Prabhupada is all-knowing. Like Krishna is all-knowing, his spiritual, his disciples, his parampara, they're all-knowing because they understand the where we come from. Somehow they know. And we can see that even in the present context, that so many disciples have the same kind of feeling with the guru, that he understands actually where we come from, what actually we were thinking. So we should always be careful about what our motivations are. But if the motivation is right, and if we are, even if we make the biggest blunders initially, we may be embarrassing ourselves and making a fool of ourselves, whatever it is. But if we are actually trying to please the spiritual master and his genuine serious followers, then actually that is certainty that is pleasing the Lord. Because Krishna says that my devotees, the gopis, are 100% surrendered to me. I am 100% surrendered to the gopis. Everything is for them. He actually takes a vow to protect the gopis, to protect his disciples. He says that I will protect, have no fear. He says this publicly, which means it's only a matter of those who follow that, then they will have no fear. Just like the gopis had no fear when they turned towards him. Actually, when on the night of the Sharad Purnima, when he played his flute, it is said that many gopis immediately abandoned their houses and whatever they were doing, and they just ran there. Some gopis who were not completely purified actually faced a lot of resistance, and somehow they couldn't go. Maybe probably from their different relatives, they were held back. But the intensity of going to Krishna was so strong, that burning desire was so strong, that actually burned away all the remaining attachments. And next time when he played his flute, they could actually go there. And when they went there, after they go there, went there, Krishna saw them, and now after having completely, you can say, burned the bridges, as we say, they have now exposed themselves in that sense, from the material point of view. They go there, and now then Krishna was testing them by saying that, well, you have come here, you have pleased me, you have, it's very nice, now you should go back because you have so many duties at home. Imagine what the status was, because in the entire society and so on, they in their house, everything, they were, they had no place to go. But then they convinced Krishna by their arguments that you are actually the pleasure of all the objects, object of all the pleasure. You are the one who knows everything, and so he then he played the he danced with them in the on Sharad Purnima. But after doing that, the mood of the gopis was that, and he immediately disappeared after that. So then the pangs of separation were even more than when he was actually present. But in that separation, they actually, the intensity of their love increased even more. So there also, Srila Prabhupada, when his disciples used to ask him that, Prabhupada, what about, because he had brought everything to them. These were completely new young boys and girls who had knew nothing. And 18, 19, 20 year olds, and when Prabhupada left, they were still 30, 32 at the most, in most cases. And they were so scared, you know, that when Prabhupada, every time he would fall very sick. So Prabhupada would quote this and say that, you are not separate from me. That actually we will be together even in a greater intensity when I am not physically present, because you will be then following my instructions. The books that I have written are the law books for the next 10,000 years. And therefore, if you follow these instructions and follow these books, then you will be with me. There will be no difference. So we can understand that actually that is the principle of Vapu and Vani, where his Vani, his instructions, which we have seen that even though he is now almost 40, almost 50 years since he's left this planet, even then, the movement is going so strong in so many quarters, practically every major town of the world, only because the essence has been understood and from the principle of the what the gopis have laid down, that if we are willing to surrender, if we are actually willing to give everything for what we can, to the extent that we can, we cannot fake it, or we do not want to do it for showing others, because it would not last very long. But if we actually appreciate others who have more of that sincerity than us, rather than feeling pangs of envy or jealousy, or actually we may criticize them, that would be destructing our spiritual feelings. But on the other hand, if we see our inadequacy but appreciate the progress others are making, then actually that gives us a greater strength. Just like, it's a very nice example, the story in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was praising Sanatana Goswami, and there were many exalted disciples of his who were much more senior than Sanatana Goswami. They were there for such a long time, they were all sitting around. He didn't speak a word about anyone else. He was only speaking for a long time, as if he had a thousand mouths about Sanatana Goswami's glories and his virtues and so on. But the reactions of all those, all the exalted disciples there, was not that secretly thinking that when will he stop talking about him? You know, he's not even, maybe he should also, he doesn't know this about me or that about me. It was not their mood. They were so happy, means they were ecstatic. I mean, and every time they used to get ecstatic, they would faint. So, you know, I mean, we cannot understand how joyful they would feel for others' happiness. So, genuine eruption of joy, just when they heard somebody glorified. So, in the same mood, we have to, even if we don't have that, even if we actually, at least if we are aware, we should be aware of our shortcomings. If we are aware that I should be feeling like this, I'm aware that I should be feeling joyful when I'm not. But then we know that I've got so much anarthas and I have to clean this. And and the only cleaning process is I have to become more sincere, because this is the critical part. That we can make mistakes, but we shouldn't make offenses, because that would really bring us down substantially. And if we do it, we probably are also creating offenses, But even then, at least if we are aware, not only we should be ashamed, but we should try to rectify it, we should try to improve upon it. So, this is the mood that was set by Srila Prabhupada, and certainly all bona fide acharyas have been doing that previous to him, as well as wherever else others are also seriously following. So, as he called it, the spirit of Vrindavan is in trying to please the spiritual master wherever he is. For us, that is the most important thing. And through that, we understand the glories of of the gopis. Also, there's another very nice lesson we can, or principle we can understand from the gopi story, is that Krishna, we know that Krishna protects his devotees, but actually the Krishna protects his devotees. The protection of Krishna comes only by his mercy, and it is very nicely described that because the gopis were completely, totally surrendered to Krishna, they had no other thought, and that is why when they were endangered, every time they were endangered, Krishna as the Paramatma in their heart, automatically he guided them to think on about Krishna, turn to Krishna immediately. So the protection of Krishna comes by him, it is guaranteed. And he even shows the process through the gopis as to why they turned to him all the time. Whenever they were in distress of any sort, whether it was the demons who were coming daily on a daily basis, or whether they were, during the Govardhan Leela also, when during the Indra's wrath, everything, every time they were in big major distress, they would turn to him. Even when Krishna left him and they were in great distress, they would turn to him. So that also actually, we may say, will we ever turn to Krishna? So here is the answer, that actually Krishna in our heart will, if we are sincere, then, and if we have been turning towards him all the time, then in our moments of need, through the Paramatma, he will actually guide us and instantly make us turn towards him. So he only makes us turn. So that is where the mercy of Krishna comes, and that is where we will turn to him. So we have to have faith in that, in that principle. Only then we will be gradually able to detach ourselves from our other activities. Also, and the mood has to be where, because in spiritual organizations sometimes also there is a competition, there's a spirit of competitiveness which is not healthy. There is certainly outside, but even in spiritual organizations we may come in with that mood, but then to please the Guru we sometimes forget that we need to do it in a mood where we, Prabhupada stressed about cooperation all the time, that we should do it. Prabhupada himself gave a story about these two sons of a father, and both were, each one wanted to prove to the father that he is the better son than his brother. So they were each massaging one part of the body of the father. But when they were massaging, since they were so bent upon not so much pleasing the father but wanting to show that they are the greater son, that actually while they were massaging, on the other hand they were hitting and punching and kicking the other son. So obviously both of them were doing that, so the father was in great pain. So Prabhupada said that actually a Krishna conscious devotee, two sons, would actually be in the mood of, not when he's massaging his father, he's concentrating on, let me think what I can do on my side, and also in such a way that my father doesn't even know that I'm doing it. So this is the mood, but there's a difference that we have to cultivate, that when we do any service, when we are looking to please the spiritual master, we should not be doing it that the goal is to please the spiritual master, and he should also know the goal, and everyone else should know the goal, and everyone should observe how I'm doing it, and then that destroys the mood completely. So the goal is to please, but it has to be done, we should do it in a way where we should concentrate on our service. It doesn't matter whether we are recognized or not recognized, and in fact we should do it in such a way that we do it as under the radar, as they say, as less visible as possible. Because Prabhupada, entire life he demonstrated how he created this whole movement, but he gave all credit to Krishna and to Guru. And that is, so if you are followers of Prabhupada, and even all the acharyas, we never hear anything, anyone, all through the parampara of Chaitanya Leela and right up to Prabhupada, anybody would ever talk about themselves. So it is only that because others have told us for our benefit that we understand. So giving the credit to Krishna and to Guru has to be right through in every action of ours. So another principle is that the gopis, especially during the Govardhan Leela, when Indra was actually he sent the Samvartaka clouds, as we know, and then it was an impossible situation. So when they turned towards Krishna, if you see the prayers were that they prayed to Krishna to actually protect the cows. The prayers were that Krishna, the cows are so helpless and the cows are, you know, you love the cow so much and they are, what will they do? So His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was commenting on this when he said that actually our prayers to when we pray to Krishna, we should pray it for others. We should not be praying for ourselves. Or if we are praying, the mood is to say that how obstacles in our spiritual life can be removed if that is the desire of the Lord. He would always say that we should say that if it is so your desire. Similarly, even if we are praying for someone's health, a devotee's health, saying that he or she is such a wonderful, sincere devotee and he or she is going through such great difficulty, and if it is your desire, because ultimately everything is based on Krishna's desire. If Krishna wants that this devotee has another 20 years to live, or whether he has any 20 days to live, that is in Krishna's hands. So if it is Krishna's desire, but if Krishna wants to change it, he can change it, and he will do it if that is the desire, if that is a sincere appeal. So we have to show our surrender to Krishna's will. That is the thing. The surrender is of our will to Krishna's will. That means finally His will should prevail. So that we can do even in our prayers. So our prayers, as the gopis were praying for the cows, so the gopis were praising Govardhan Hill. They say he is the greatest devotee. And why? Because Govardhan was actually providing the grass which was feeding the cows. So they were looking at with such selflessness, not only in everything but also in their prayers when they were pleasing the other great devotees as they saw it. So that is another lesson that we understand how we can pray to Krishna. So when the spiritual master sees that we are very keen to serve other devotees, when we are keen to help other devotees, to elevate them, to encourage them if they need encouragement, when he sees that, that really pleases him the most. And that actually that gives us the entrance to his innermost recesses of his heart. You know, the spiritual master's heart is so big, you know, he can love the entire world. But within that, you know, if the real core will be when he sees that we are willing to give ourselves selflessly and to try to help others in all ways. And that is why when he was stressing about book distribution, or whether he was stressing about, Prabhupada was stressing about book distribution, or about deity worship, about keeping the temple clean, about everything was related to a sacrifice. Not only sacrifice of the time, but to please others. Maintaining the temple clean, why? Because when others come, and that is what we've seen, that everywhere ISKCON has such beautiful temples. That is one thing which everybody speaks. Even those who don't believe in God, they will say that ISKCON temples are the best. Why? Because when they go to this continent or this city or that city, there is a tremendous effort by devotees because this principle was there. Similarly, the deity worship has been of the highest standard. So If the pujari is doing it thinking that everyone should be watching me, no, that is not the mood. And hopefully it is not there. But it is why this elaborate process is also there, to please Krishna, but also such that even other newcomers get inspired, and actually they see the awe and reverence that with which we should try our best to serve Krishna. So everything, every service is actually the, it is not the external only, but the principle is, one is to surrender our time and consciousness in whatever we connect to please the spiritual master, such that he is happy in his service to Srila Prabhupada. But also that it helps and pleases devotees, because it may be newcomers or it may be others who are already, like in book distribution, when we have marathon, how many people are involved in it? All over the world. Everyone, and not just the marathon, but then there are millions of devotees who are on the streets every day. So then there are so many projects of Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada's disciples other than temples. So whatever project it is, whether it is successful or not is not at all the issue. You know, we may think that this project is very successful. No. We may see it materially. But actually, when Prabhupada, in his time, there were 108 temples that came up. Do we know how many temples were started and closed? Probably hundreds. Do we know about a devotee went to New Mexico and started a temple, small temple, one couple went there. Somebody went to Montreal, somebody went to Caracas and so on. But there are so many places when devotees went and didn't succeed. So do you think that was a failure? In Krishna's eyes, in Prabhupada's eyes, they were not failures. As we have seen that Arjun was Arjuna a success and Jatayu was a failure? No, the both were equally glorious in the eyes of Krishna. So if we see this principle, that it is not to be judged by the external success, but actually the mood. And the mood is that if we are trying to please the spiritual master, that should be a 100% objective. Whether it manifests, that is in Krishna's hands. Otherwise, there were others in the parampara, when Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, he sent his disciples to London and in the early part of last century, and nothing happened. Was that a failure? No. Because in one sense, yes, they couldn't do it at that time. But the real sense, every effort to please the spiritual master is most glorious. And that is why the mood has to be intent on our service, not on the results. And actually, if you see, we all have even without coming to Krishna consciousness, there is also a feeling. There is always Krishna provides a certain goodness. There is, we can be in the mode of goodness also. Many people, not maybe many, but maybe there are people who, even if they are not active or not so much into believing in God, but still they have a keenness to do something good. They want to help others. Now, it is unfortunate if that does not develop into service to God. But we can. The point here is that this is given to everyone. We sometimes see it in children also. Why we sometimes? In fact, all children, in fact, at a certain age, they have such an innocence they don't discriminate, for instance. They have no sense about rich or poor, educated or uneducated. You know, no child has it. Even when they are 8 or 10 or 15, provided they don't, then the environment takes over. And then if they're going to an elite school, or they're only thinking that, I have to pursue this, and I am doing so well, and I am coming first in class, and someone's coming last, so he's a loser, and I'm a winner. That is the system takes over, or the environment changes. But otherwise, as a natural child with protection, it is. So we can see that we have that innate goodness, but it is mixed. Everyone has the good and the bad. So if that is nurtured and developed, then actually that can come into so many little things in our devotional service, which can make us extremely encouraged. And we don't have to see for big things. The beauty of association of devotees is that not only we get the sustenance and encouragement to follow our practices and to, if we are actually falling behind, we will, now we have nothing else to go to. You know, it's like we are in the middle of the sea. Now we have to go to the other side of the ocean because now there's no way we can go back. Because, you know, we just, Krishna is very tricky that way. So he has seen that our taste is gone. So there is, it's very difficult to recreate what we thought was a joy because he's actually in his mercy, he has taken away that taste. But we may not have the taste for devotional service so many times. So we're tasteless so many times. So we are neither here nor there. So that time we have to just stick to the process. We just have to stick, and that is the beauty of association, that sooner or later it will come and it will manifest in some way, at least in prasad, if nothing else. It's almost a guarantee. So at least if we keep that going, and if we are coming to any devotee whom we like, or then slowly, you know, provided we are sincere, you know, if we are not criticizing, and if we are not turned against them, then gradually it will come. I can share out of the hundreds of examples that could be there in everyone's lives, but I want to illustrate the small things which actually stick in our minds. You know, about 12, 13 years ago, there was one Vrindavan Yatra, I think in 2002, and we couldn't go. My wife and I couldn't go, and there was this devotee who, she was so nice. I mean, she was so keen, and she knew that we couldn't go, that she, in the entire 12, 13 days Yatra, she kept a book. Every single day she wrote down in long hand every place that she went to, that everyone had gone to, and then came and gave us that book. Now, I think everyone's lives, you have so many examples of this, how people, devotees help others, but we take it for granted. So when this happens, then not only is it lasting a memory, but also it gives us a great encouragement and also a glimpse of what we should be doing to others. I may have mentioned this because this, often I do this, but you know, one of the very, very minor things, but very, in one way, very significant was, several years ago, when just after the morning darshan, when a flower plate was being moved around, and before the plate, I took the flower, and then there were only two flowers left, and there was a big flower, and then there was only a leaf. And then when it came to the remaining two devotees, one devotee took the leaf immediately, so that he could give it the flower to the other one. So these are, there must be hundreds of observations and feelings that we have. We should be in touch with those. We should understand that and see how others are happily giving to other devotees. And that, if it pleases us, imagine how much it pleases Prabhupada and pleases the Lord. And if we dovetail and start thinking, then we stop thinking too much about our problems and we start thinking about this. And actually then we realize that, you know, we were so foolish thinking about making such a big thing about, as they say, making a mountain out of a molehill, making a big issue about a small thing. Why? Because we are concentrating on ourselves. Because if we put ourselves in the center, it can become a big, big thing. But if the center is much larger, then we are not even a dot in that entire circle. So the larger the circle, the smaller we will be. So if the circle encompasses a whole congregation and so many others, and if we are busy, then we also see that how others are suffering. The others have so many problems, so many difficulties. So that is the beauty of association, where we, in spite of challenges, we constantly find understanding. And this is Krishna's mercy, coming through through Guru, that they will give us, you know, if Paramatma sees this feeling in our heart that we are sincere, he will be providing us this, how do we get the observation? He provides that. How do we suddenly get a realization? The Janmashtami or Sharad Purnima, such big festivals happen, and suddenly one day you think that who arranges this? And then after we go back at 2 in the morning, who cleans it? Who are the people? And then you actually realize there are so many people who sacrifice very happily when everything is done. So who gives this thought? It's Krishna. So this is how Krishna reciprocates. So he actually will give us the thoughts to further our spiritual life when we, if we want to see it in that way. So ultimately it's a matter of how much we can develop that faith in such a way that we have a complete, we come to a stage by Guru's grace and by Krishna's mercy, we come to a stage where we depend entirely on them. Like for instance, so many things are motivated by fear. In fact, all our almost all activities generally are motivated by fear. People, if you see, it's either because we have for lack of security, or the lack of we have not got enough respectability, or lack of money. Maybe we want our family to be well provided, or these are all means fear of this or fear of that is actually driving our actions. And here Krishna is saying, have no fear. So why? Because he says, I have taken a vow to protect you. Now, if he's taken a vow, it's a question of either is he bluffing? If he's not bluffing, then it's only a matter that he's right, but I'm not still believing it fully. We have to admit that. There's only two things. Either we convince others that he's not true, it's not true, or if it's true and I'm not following it, which means I don't have complete faith in that. So it is the latter, that we don't have complete faith. So to come to that level is the whole purpose of life. That how we can entirely spend our life gradually or faster, maybe as much as we can, as quickly as we can, come to a stage where we can completely be dependent on him, where if we have, where then there's no fear. If there is any fear, the fear is of, as we are told, that the devotee's real fear should only be one, that if I am away from devotees and if I am away from Krishna consciousness, that should be the greatest fear. Because that is a permanent loss. Other things will come and go. And if we see back in our life, we can see how things fluctuate. You know, material possessions come and go, challenges come and go, and eventually, you know, whatever we are, we have to, whatever material success we have, but we have to leave everything behind. So this absence of fear will come only when we develop that faith, and that and how much we can faith, that is the question we need to ask, that how much is the faith that we can develop that. And one other lesson that comes up from here, which can help us, is from studying the lives of the gopis, is that since they are giving themselves completely, totally, 100%, Krishna will ask us at the end of our life. In fact, he's asking us all the time, but certainly he will ask us at the end of our life. The one question that he will ask us is that how much have you held back? How much have you given, and how much have you given for my service and my pleasure, and how much have you held back? So if this question is in our mind right from now, then that becomes a good principle, good barometer to judge whether we are on the right track or not. It should at least be constantly on our mind as to how much we are holding back. Now, gopis have demonstrated that they have not held back anything, means completely, in mind, word, deed, action, everything, totally. So that is the gold standard. Now, when we see ourselves, how much do we hold back in terms of caution? That are we doing Krishna consciousness as a something which fits into some pious activity which my parents taught me, and therefore now I am coming to the temple, I like devotees, I like the prasad, but it has got its Sunday 8 to 11, and then I've got my rest of the time and everything, and this, so it fits into a nice schedule. It's now good, nice compartment. 7 days message, I have this, and I can do that. And the rest of the time, there is no trace of Krishna. Is that it? Or do we take something and gradually link it to our life? Namely, we take, we have now started chanting, then that means we brought Krishna to our house. Then we are offering our food, and Krishna's, gradually the house is becoming his. Everything that we take is offered to him first. And then our friends become those who are around us in Krishna consciousness. So this is where we need to judge as to how much are we holding back. Holding back in our consciousness, holding back in our money, certainly. Let's not be very esoteric. It's also very practical. Krishna is very practical. So how much we hold back, he doesn't see how much you give. Someone who's giving 10,000 rupees may look very good. And someone who's giving 100 rupees, you may say, is very little. But if that person out of 1,000 is giving 100, and somebody who has 1 crore and he gives 10,000, who's giving more? So Krishna knows how much we can give. So we have to be practical. It doesn't mean that we have to just abandon everything. We have to be responsible for our other everything. But if we bring Krishna in, we will not be the loser. If we bring Krishna into our lives, it really enriches, but also gradually makes us finally understand that he is the owner of everything. You know, he, the ultimate, we are in illusion thinking that I am trying to surrender. Actually, we have nothing to surrender because we have nothing. Only thing we can surrender is our consciousness because all material possessions are His. So, you know, so if we take a whole life perhaps to finally come to an understanding that I don't have anything, but that anyway is the fact that we have. So, at least, you know, that consciousness should gradually come. So, how much time we are able to give, how much consciousness we are able to give, how much of our heart, how much of our thoughts, you know, because action will follow thoughts. So gradually, this is where this question should be, it could help us, that Krishna will ask us, how much have you held back? And it, to the extent that we are moving towards that, and towards Krishna means towards towards everything that Krishna represents. That means He comes, you know, through so many ways. So that entire spiritual world, if we want to really bring our life, dovetail our life towards that, then it is Krishna who can believe that yes, this person actually has a deep desire to serve me, and Srimati Radharani will be, you know, is the one who is very merciful, and if she recommends, then you know we can make progress. So and the final thing that we need to see is how much faith do we have in this process, such that we can give ourselves to Him. I also wanted to spend a few minutes, just a few minutes before, if anybody has any questions. Because today is also the disappearance day of Sarup Damodar Goswami and Shivanand Sen, two very, very great personalities. So I just speak a few words. You know, Chaitanya Leela, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are thousands of very, very close associates of Prabhupada, of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came with him. So one may say they are all close associates, and they are very, very close associates. But actually, among them, there were those who were extremely close, and among the extremely close, there were a few who were always with him, who were the closest to him. So Sarup Damodar Goswami was actually one of the two who were almost entirely with him. He was an eternal associate. He is actually Lalita Sakhi, who came in Chaitanya Leela as Sarup Damodar Goswami. And not only the physical proximity, but as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita, says that nobody knew the Shastras like Sarup Damodar Goswami. In the words of Chaitanya, in the words of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, he was like Brihaspati in terms of knowledge, and he was like he could sing like the Gandharvas. That summarizes everything. He has two most prominent qualities. So he understood, and not only the scriptures. He was not only the limit of scholarship, but he understood the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu like nobody else. So it was not the physical proximity, but he was actually he could represent Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he understood his mood, and he actually personified the Krishna Prem, and he understood the meaning of Krishna Tattva, the and what Chaitanya Lord Chaitanya wanted. So it is said that nobody would ever give a song or a poem or a book as an offering to Lord Chaitanya without actually going through Sarup Damodar Goswami. So he was really like the final filter, you know, because he completely knew the mood of Lord Chaitanya. He was actually earlier his name was Purushottam Acharya, and from Navadvip. And then when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he became almost half mad, and then he also then took sannyas from one Chaitanya Anand, but he never accepted the robes of a sannyasi. And it is said that he's actually Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami only says that you know, he was very he was very quiet, kept himself aloof generally. But at the same time, he was always very watchful. He was always aware of what is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's needs. Raghunath Das Goswami, one of the great Sikh Goswamis, was actually really sheltered and protected and nurtured, you can say, by Sarva Damodar Goswami. And of course he was a wonderful, he could sing beautiful poems and bhajans, and like a Gandharva, as he said. So that's why Lord Chaitanya also gave him his sannyas name was Swarup, and then Damodar was given to him. The name Damodar was given by Lord Chaitanya because he could sing so well and because of his musical skills. That's how it became Swarup Damodar. And it is said that he also wrote a book called Sangeet Damodar on music. So that's about Swarup Damodar Goswami. And also Shivanand Sen was another very great associate of Lord Chaitanya. He was a grihastha. He had three sons, and all the three sons were exalted souls. Chaitanya Das, Kavi Karnapurna, and Puri Das. And they were, all became associates of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya gave his very lot of time, but he gave a lot of mercy to all the three sons also individually. And there are a couple of very beautiful stories about Shivanand Sen. His prominent quality was he was expert in arranging all these facilities, transport, because that time everyone just walked. They walked from Vrindavan to Puri, Vrindavan to Mayapur, Mayapur to Puri, Puri to Mayapur. I mean, it could be months at a time. So he used to make all the arrangements for their travel, walk, all the food, staying, everything. So he was like the final thing everyone looked to for doing that. So one story relates to when they were going, all the devotees were going to meet Lord Chaitanya in Puri. They were going from Navadvip to Puri, and so one dog came and he joined the party, and he was so compassionate, Shivanand Sen, that he actually allowed the dog to also come. And he was and he had given, told his servants to constantly feed him, cook rice and take care of him. But one day the servant forgot. So when Shivanand Sen in the evening came to know after when he found that on this travel that they had forgotten to give, so he was very distressed. And then he started looking, but he couldn't find the dog. Then he sent 10 people, 10 other men were looking, but they came back and everyone was very surprised, where did he go, but they couldn't find the dog. So they were a bit disturbed, but then they kept walking. But when they went to Puri and they met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they found the same dog was actually sitting next to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya was actually, he was sitting a little distance away, and Lord Chaitanya was feeding him, giving him Mahaprasad, and asking the dog to chant Krishna, Hari, and Ram. And the dog was actually chanting Krishna, Krishna. So Shivanand Sen was, everybody was really astonished and also very encouraged. But Shivanand Sen, out of his natural humility, he immediately paid obeisances to the dog because he felt that he had made a big mistake. It was his fault. He took it that he didn't feed the dog. And then the next day, the dog disappeared because he had actually attained the spiritual world, formed the spiritual form, and had gone back to Vaikuntha. So anyone who came in touch with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was bound for the eternal abode. So Shivanand Sen was had the same mood of compassion that Lord Chaitanya had. Another very beautiful story relates to his, once he took his son, Chaitanya Das, to Lord Chaitanya. And so Lord Chaitanya asked him, what is your name? He asked the boy. The boy said his name, Chaitanya Das. He's saying, what kind of name is this? It's very difficult to understand. So Shivanand Sen said that he has got the name which came from me, from within. He's got the name which came to me from within. Then he invited Lord Chaitanya for prasad. So Lord Chaitanya came, and Shivanand Sen had bought very
costly remnants of Lord Jagannath's prasad and very lavish meal. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was extremely close to Shivananda Sen, so he didn't say anything, he accepted, he ate everything. But his mind was dissatisfied because he had eaten too much and it was too opulent food and all that. So, but his son Chaitanya Das, he understood the mood of Lord Chaitanya. So next day he invited Lord Chaitanya for prasad. And when Lord Chaitanya came, this Chaitanya Das had provided all the antidotes to heavy food. So he only had ginger and yogurt, lime, salt, just a few things. Lord Chaitanya was very happy. He said, this boy understands my mood. So this is an indication of how not only the father, but the son, you know, they understood his, Lord Chaitanya's mood. And there's last instance I can think of is that he once, you know, when they used to go on these travels, they had to pass through tolls. Even those days they had tolls. So the zamindars used to have these tolls for the maintenance of the roads. So it is nothing new that we are getting now. So the whole party would be there, a big party. So when the party would progress, and since it made sense, everyone would go forward and he would stay back and settle everything. But since he knew all the accommodation, so everyone had to wait for him to settle with the zamindar at the toll, at the toll and inspectors and go ahead. So this time Lord Nityanand was there and Advaita Acharya and all, many great stalwarts all in the group. So they passed the toll and then they went and waited at the village for him to, for Shivananda Sen to settle with the toll and come. So he took some time, and by the time he came, but then the devotees were very hungry, and Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityanand was getting very hungry and upset. He says, I'm so hungry, I can die. And where is this Shivananda Sen? And he got so upset that he said that I curse that his three sons will die. So, hearing this, you know, when immediately after that, Shivananda Sen came, when he came to his house, his wife, you know, predictably, I mean, she just started crying. Okay, you know, we didn't give him any quarters and food, so he has cursed our sons to die. So, so Shivananda Sen's immediate response was, saying, you know, he was smiling, he says, oh, this is wonderful, why should you be crying? You know, we are fully blessed. And he immediately went to Lord Nityanand. When he went to Lord Nityanand, the first thing Lord Nityanand did was to kick him in the chest. So, Lord Nityanand is a personality who may have apparent contradictions, but actually he's Lord Balaram, and he's non-different than, he's actually also the Krishna Tattva, so he is Krishna. But his apparently contradictory nature shows that actually when he is very pleased with someone, and when he blesses someone, and when he is wanting someone to benefit, he may actually show himself as very angry. So, but devotees are there, of course, knew him. So they took, so when he did that, Shivananda Sen was ecstatic, was very happy. So he touched his feet and then he took him to his quarters and he gave him the quarters and fed him. And he actually spoke very glorious words to him, very nice, saying that my life is now completely purified because, you know, you are the abode which everyone, all the three worlds seek to go to, and you know, your blessings are what everyone can aspire for, and so on. And so then he got Lord Nityanand's mercy, and Lord Nityanand was very happy with him when he saw his mood, because he always tests his devotees, and as Balaram, he is the spiritual, the ultimate spiritual guru. So he was testing him, and when he saw the response from Shivananda Sen, he was very happy. So with these words I end here, and if there's any questions or comments, Mahaprabhu. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Wonderful class. And it's a little heavy question, you will excuse me. Heavy in the sense that you have used the word that we are showing to the people that how much we are doing, but how much we are keeping back, that people don't know. Now, this type of realization will come only to those people who are really, in one sense, self-realized. It's not a flattering, self-realized in the sense, Sri Maharaj has written his book, and he was not ready to write anything until unless Bhakti Tirth Maharaj forced him to write. Just like when you gave one instance about the Pushpa Abhishek at 2 o'clock, people, how the people are cleaning the temple, we don't know all those things. How we are keeping thing, and how things, people know now, by now. So how people will, it's not that after 20 year or 50 year we will come to know what Krishnachand Prabhu has done for the temple after 50 years. But we will never know how much he is holding back now at this time the services which he is doing. So this type of realization, even to put this type of things here in the class, that how much we are keeping holding, if the services which one is rendering, people don't know. It means you are holding it. If people know that what you are doing is, I know the people don't, Maharaj was never interested to write his biography. If people know what you are, how you are serving and what is your realization and what you are holding and for what purpose you are holding, that will serve the purpose of the society more than just hearing something about somebody after he leaves his body.
Actually,
so something should come out to the people, how you are holding, what you are holding, and how is living your life. That will be very much in practical way to the people than reading the books. Books we read so many things, but how the people who are Krishna conscious, they are living their life, and what they are holding and what they are not holding. If something like that, if you can say something and write something on that, that will be very much helpful for the people in large.
Actually, this statement I quoted from Ms. Holiness Radhanath Maharaj's lecture, 1990 lecture he was talking about, that Krishna will be seeing, and Guru also will be seeing how much you hold back. That's a question Krishna will ask us. Now, this... Yeah, devotees, according to their capacities, will help in... There are some things which are seen from the outside, or let's say which are on a relatively more tangible way. Someone gives money to help this project or that project. But what Prabhupada is referring, what Radhanath Swami Maharaj is referring, what is really the issue, is actually... when we're talking of our consciousness, the subtle aspects are even the greatest challenge. Whether someone gives, 10,000 or 1 lakh, 2 lakhs, that is something which someone needs to give. But more important is the six anarthas that we have, the desires that we have. Those are not spoken, means those are never discussed. Nobody discusses about their own individual cases, but through their realizations, through their life, just like, we have so many devotees here in our congregation, in the renounced order, also outside, who nobody is looking at, the brahmacharis, nobody expects them to give even a single rupee. But it is really a matter of consciousness, because that is the most difficult thing to give. So yes, there are different things that we can give, but ultimately it has to lead to not just
the material possessions, but more important is the, when you say body, mind and soul, it's really the question of our thoughts, how we struggle against the anarthas, how we regulate our lives. Those things, we all have a very long way to go, and that's everyone is struggling in the same boat. But those who are progressing more, there are so many devotees who come regularly to the temple for morning programs. Those who don't even stay in the temple, they come, or they're getting up early in the morning. And so many aspects that impress us and encourage us. Those are the things that we need to see. So holding back is in many, many forms. And the subtler things are even more challenging than the grosser things. So that's where, only we would know what is the reason we have maybe done some service. Was it something that we wanted subtle recognition? Was it something that we wanted someone to know? Or just pleased us, it pleased us because we feel nice. Now these things, even we ourselves are not sure what we are doing. So it's something which sometimes it can bewilder us. But if we have a sincere desire, then gradually the motivations will become pure. So what I'm talking of, what is said is that when we talk of clean motivations, it's something which we have to aspire for, because it's very, very difficult to come to a stage to say that, I can say for myself, but I'm sure many of us would be probably feeling the same, that it may be mixed. So there may be good intentions, good feelings, but it may be mixed with a little bit of other things, or more of the other things. We don't know. So the giving up those subtle things is, so many desires are there. No? So many desires. It may manifest in so many ways, and ultimately it's between us and the individual. And if we do reveal to our guru or somebody, that's one thing. But otherwise, ultimately it is not really in the public domain, but it's something which will again affect us, because whatever, someone may be singing the praises, but Krishna sees that there are desires are not... if you have the slightest tinge of material desire, as we know, we cannot enter the spiritual world. So all are moving towards that. So I would only say that we have to concentrate on every aspect, particularly the subtler aspects. For distinction, for lust, for greed, pride. So someone may have more of one and may not have such a problem with something else, but one or the other issues always come with us. So, yeah. Last question, because we are already over time. Just one question.
Thank you, Prabhu. And maybe it is not connected to your visual lecture, but yesterday in one lecture I heard that Srila Prabhupada ordered that on Sunday feast at least there should be 12 items. Srila Prabhupada was just organizing this ISKCON, he was alone, so he used to buy everything, collect donations, and even cook and serve 12 items minimum, pakoras and other things. So what is the problem that we cannot do such like things? Because last Sunday's prasadam is a little bit austere, so we may lose some guests.
Well, then Prabhupada said this and did this in 1966. He has given many instructions. So this is one which he said, to have the Sunday feast and to have opulent prasad. That is true. He also wanted many projects. He also wanted social development. He also wanted change in people's consciousness. So as per time, place and circumstance, each project, each spiritual master has to understand and see how what will please Prabhupada, because some may be very apparently contradictory. If you only pursue one, you can have 12 items and then you can restrict it to 100 people, because it's definitely, we can't feed 3,000 people with 12 items. It's not possible. Prabhupada didn't have 3,000 people. And if today, I may think something, you may think something, someone else may think something else, but best we go by, you know, what the spiritual authority would think. And if the spiritual authority has felt that, you know, because we are going for many large projects, particularly in the Advaita and so on, so we need to tighten our belt because we are having a shortage of funds also. So therefore we needed to simplify it, and after a lot of deliberations and debate, because if we could easily do one thing and not the other. So, and at the same time we have chosen not to restrict, and that, because that was also Prabhupada's wish, that anyone can come in. Whatever the background, whatever the status, anyone comes in. Whatever their mental condition may be, he may be totally anti the temple, whatever. He comes in for prasad, it is open for all. So we have to honor that. So keeping that in mind, it is well that on a temporary basis, right now, we are trying to see what we can do to complete some of the projects which could have lasting impressions and changing hearts and transforming hearts. So there are so many balancing equipments, things that we need to do. Ultimately, it's difficult for us to take a call. So, you know, we have to leave it to those who, you know, have a complete overview and then have to take a decision. Okay, right now, we'll do this. That's the thing. So, I think... Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna. There is an announcement